You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services. Every Monday through Friday during the Razorbacks football training camp, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
Arkansas begins preparation for its season opener against Rice at practice today. Sam Pittman went on his radio show last night and declared that preseason camp is over after 17 practices. He said the Razorbacks are going to practice today and tomorrow in preparation for a mock game on Saturday. They'll take Sunday off, and then they'll get into their game week preparations on Monday. But he did say that the next three practices are all geared toward Rice preparation, so they'll prepare for Rice a little bit more than they will for other opponents that they play throughout the season. Matt Jones joined by Hogs Illustrated publisher Clay Henry today. Clay, I'm always interested to hear coaches on their coaches shows because it's just it's such a different medium for them, you know, than say when they're in a news conference or a teleconference or anything like that. It's a more relaxed setting. And I thought listening to Sam Pittman last night, he gave a lot of great insights into his team.
Yeah, I think that part of it is that they control the medium. In other words, Chuck Barrett's there. Chuck's going to ask him a certain number of questions. Chuck may even have the questions handed to him before the meeting. They might have been prepared by Kyle Parkinson. It is a relaxed medium in that he knows what's coming. Now, I know they have a little bit of a session that where fans write down questions, but they don't have to answer them all. they can pick and choose. When you're in a media setting, you don't know what's coming and you don't know what the follow-ups are. So I think it is the most relaxed setting that you can have for a head coach.
Pittman gave some personnel notes last night that I thought were newsworthy. He said that John Stephen Jones is going to be the number three quarterback behind Malik Hornsby and, of course, the starter KJ Jefferson. He mentioned that at left tackle, Jalen St. John is going to be their number two left tackle. And then I thought it was really interesting, Clay, to hear him comment on Dominique Johnson, who moved to tight end for a brief period this preseason. He said since Dominique Johnson has come back to running back, he's, quote, twice as better than he was before he made that move to tight end and back. And he even joked, he said, at this rate, we're going to move him to wide out and maybe another position or two. And when he comes back, he might be Herschel Walker or Darren McFadden.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was both great insight and also the chuckles of the night. You know, you got to have a little fun, right? But I think that we had a feeling that wasn't tied in for life. And when you made that move and that they're looking at numbers and, okay, you know, if we lose another guy in camp, let's have somebody that's had some early snaps, you know, kind of some cross training that, you know, I think they felt like they had enough tight ends, but it was right at the borderline to have practice when you get into this week, which you're going to have, you know, your normal three tight ends plus some scout team guys. And so I guess he didn't like it too much, huh? he ramped up a little bit different, played behind his pads a little bit, ran a little tougher, a little faster, maybe a little better attention to detail. And then all at once, like, you know, the curtain has lifted and there's a new running back that you hadn't seen in the last year and a half, and a little bit more motivation. It's exactly what you wanted to see. It might not have, you know, been exactly what you thought was going to happen, but it's pretty good stuff, right?
Yeah. And, you know, Pittman, before the preseason camp started, he talked about the most important thing that's going to have to come out of this camp is that they're going to have to identify a backup running back. And Rocket Sanders has taken hold of that number two position. I think a lot of us expected that AJ Green out of Tulsa Union might be in the number two, number three conversation. He's dealt with some injuries. Pittman mentioned that he doesn't get north-south enough in his running, you know, indicated that he hasn't had very good scrimmages whenever he's been in the, you know, the live scrimmage portion. So what Johnson is doing, I think, is really noteworthy, because this is a position that Sam Pittman himself said before the preseason is one that he's going to really be watching. And you know as well as I do that running backs, they're not going to last an entire season. You need an army of running backs to be able to get through a season.
That's right, Matt. And, you know, when they say, hey, we're going into spring looking for some answers, trying to quantify things, and that's exactly what happened at running back. And I did remember that one of the early podcasts that we made was going to be interesting to see if, you know, which ones of these running backs would get extended practice time and who would miss. And almost immediately, AJ went down. He doesn't get any of the individual periods. He doesn't get the installations. You know, maybe he doesn't understand where those holes are going to open up. Can't get north south because he doesn't really understand that's going to be a hole. When they hand you the ball and you look and it looks like a wall of blockers and you don't see any seams, the natural instinct of a running back is, all right, I'm going to make a wide cut. And what happens is that you take one more step and that's when the seam opens up. And then that third set, you're in it and then you're through it. But it takes a lot of faith by that back, especially a young back, that those 330 pounders are all going to be separated a little bit so I have some place to run. And it didn't take, and it probably would have if he had been out there for every single practice and had the installs and understanding of this is how it's going to fall through. And these are the cuts that are available to you where the seams are going to be. And just takes a little bit longer. And so it's, you know, he's used to being the fastest guy out there where he can make that one cut to the outside and nobody can stay with him. But, you know, those 4-6 players and 4-5 safeties, they gobble that stuff up. So yeah, don't count him out yet. And you may see him kind of surface middle of the season as things start to, as they say, the light comes on and might be a real bright light.
I think we would all agree that tight end is the position of concern for Arkansas. You've got a couple of really good frontline players in Blake Kern and Hudson Henry, but behind them, it's really been, I don't know if a mess would be the right word, but, you know, they just can't keep the bodies, you know, at tight end. I know Nathan Max, the walk-on is there. The news came out yesterday that Coylen Jackson is not going to play any longer because of the injuries that he's been facing. Of course, the same thing happened earlier this preseason with Levi Draper after they moved him from linebacker to tight end. I did think it was interesting to hear Sam Pittman talk last night about Landon Rogers, the quarterback from Little Rock Parkview. He said that Rogers came to him during the preseason and asked if he could move the tight end, basically to, you know, give him a position to get on the field. He's so far down the depth chart at quarterback. He had no chance of getting on the field this year outside of, you know, just some mass injury happening at that position. And he said that Rogers can really catch and he can really run. And he said he can get vertical in a hurry and thinks that he could be a real threat if they can put about 20 to 25 more pounds on him.
Yeah. The name that, came to mind immediately was Scott Bull to me. And Scott played quarterback and tight end and fullback, and eventually in 75 made it full circle back to quarterback and, you know, was the leader of the great Cotton Bowl championship team, 75, you know, that kind of was Coach Burrell's swan song. I think Landon Rogers, and the good news about that is that quarterbacks seem to understand what exactly is trying to have, what you're trying to get done all across the board. And it might not take him long to pick up things, the blocking. Yes. But, the seams, the looks that they're trying to put on the safeties and how it all kind of meshes, the blocking, he should get that fairly quickly and is going to provide some depth. And I know he's a great athlete. You can see him running in the open field and see how that what Sam said last night about being a vertical stretch, and he's got the length, and there's nothing that would keep him from being a great tight end. Just going to need a little time. Wouldn't expect it to show up, you know, early this season, but maybe by, you know, middle of the season, late in the season, you maybe that's about the time you need him too. If you get some injury situations or some COVID situations where all at once you're short of tight end.
Tight end is such an interesting position because it's an athlete's position. I mean, I think about, Antonio Gates, he came over as a basketball player and You know, Tony Gonzalez was a great basketball player. You saw Tim Tebow go through tight end with the Jaguars this preseason. And you see this with Landon Rodgers too. Even a Hudson Henry, I know he technically played tight end at Pulaski Academy, but it was just kind of a glorified way to get another receiver on the field, or, you know, a different way to refer to a receiver. It's a position that you can be really versatile with.
Yeah. I mean, it's I think what you said about Hudson, everyone realized that he wasn't playing tight end. He was a flexed receiver. Now, whether you want to say it's a flex tight end or just say he's a slot receiver or whatever, but they've put him out there and were hopeful that a cornerback would line up opposite him and he would play volleyball above the net, so to speak, that, you know, he had the length that a 5'10 cornerback, which is what the typical position looks like at that level. Just don't have very many 6 foot corners. So he's got 7-8 inches on those guys. But it, you know, it's a position that you can be multiple and do things. Now I do expect Nathan Bax to have a good year. And I think he is a good viable option. So anybody that thinks they only have two is probably mistaken. Nathan is probably where Blake Kern was 2 years ago. That don't really know that much about him, but he's developed and he's worked in the weight room. You know, he was a transfer. I think he came from a mid-level Division II school and now is starting to become a real option. He's not, you know, he's not going to beat you deep or anything like that, but he knows the plays and he can block. And so, but yeah, Landon Rodgers, that would be an amazing find. And I think everybody that watched Parkview last year mentioned that he could probably play other positions, not just a quarterback, because of his great athleticism and his frame. He's got that 6'5 frame that you know is going to pack on more weights. And he's skinny at what at 205, 210. You know, he's still got room to grow. And you know, it's they knew when they got him that they had somebody both mentally and physically that could be an asset to the football team.
They spent more time talking about the offense last night. They did talk a little bit about the defense. You mentioned that Andrew Parker has stood out at linebacker. That kind of made my ears perk up when I heard that. Said he really likes the vocal leadership of his safeties. He said his cornerbacks are not nearly as loud as his safeties are. He mentioned Joe Fouché, Simeon Blair, Jalen Catalan, among those who, you know, really have their voice heard on the practice field. But I thought the most interesting analysis, if you will, of his defense came when he was speaking about the defensive line. He said that he feels comfortable rotating 8 players along the defensive line this year. He said he thinks that's important. That's how you keep a defensive line fresh and healthy, you know, not only throughout a game, but also throughout the season. But he mentioned 8 players, or he mentioned that he feels comfortable about rotating 8. And then he went on to mention, I think, 9 or 10 defensive linemen. So it's obvious that he really likes this defensive line group, in particular, the 3 transfers that they've had come in out of Missouri and Illinois State.
Yeah, Matt, the key thing about that is that they had 3 scrimmages, or I guess they had 2 major scrimmages, and they had a mini midweek one, half scrimmage that we didn't see or didn't really know much about, but they worked in another full contact session with certain players. And every time they did, they made sure that those 3 guys really got thrown into the fire and found out what they could do, what they couldn't do. And it found, I think the main takeaway is that there wasn't much they couldn't do. And even though John Ridgeway had not been in that Missouri system like Utsi and Williams, he picked it up really fast. They would like him to play a little lower, a little bit better pad level. He tends to just kind of stand up after a few plays. You know, he loses his pad level, so they're still working on that. Which means you might not want to give him 20 snaps in a row. You might want to give him 10. You know, it's like 2 series and rotate another guy in there. But they've got that kind of depth at nose tackle with Isaiah Nichols and Taurean Carter. You know, this is a unique Arkansas defensive line in that there may not be great players, There might not be a Dan Hampton, a Lloyd Phillips, or a Wayne Martin, but they've got a lot of guys that you would play in just about any year of Arkansas football. You would take this guy and he'd fit in the two deep, and that's encouraging.
He said that they learned so much last year about, you know, quote, two spotting and three spotting their positions because they had to with the threat of COVID knocking out players, you know, at any given time during a game week. He said that, you know, they felt like that was so beneficial to them. They wanted to do that again this year, and they have. But then he kind of transitioned into off of that way of thinking came what they call their combo periods. And basically, he went to his assistant coaches before the season, and he told them, take your nightmare scenario where you lose the one guy out of your room that makes you stay up at night. KJ Jefferson at quarterback, a Treylon Smith at running back, Treylon Burks, a Grant Morgan, a Jalen Catalan, and Ricky Stromberg. Take those guys out during the combo period, insert their backups, because we want to be able to have the starters have experience whenever it's time for him to step in. We don't want it to be the first time that that's happened during a game. I thought that was really interesting insight, and I think that probably was born out of the preparation that they had to have last season with the threat of COVID, and probably still a threat of that this year too.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Now, I want to talk about the combo periods, which is you have the starters and the freshmen on one field, and then you have the twos and the threes on another field, and you have two practices going on at the same time, and you've got your coaches split. It's my understanding that Chad Morris did that, but they went so fast that they didn't coach them. They just ran plays. And I talked to a couple of old coaches and old players who were at practice the other day, and they were doing that period. I think it might've been a Thursday or maybe a Wednesday of last week, and that, yeah, they were going fast, but they stopped them and they chewed on them. Every coach, every player, if the technique fell down, if the technique didn't stay solid, if they, you know, looked like they were fatigued and, you know, made mental mistakes, they got their butts chewed. They were being coached hard and firm and loud. And that was encouraging to the coaches that I talked to, because it's exactly the opposite of what they saw during the Chad Morris era. Whereas, yeah, they did some of the things that you would say, yeah, that's the right way to practice, except they weren't being coached. So you make a mistake, it's not being corrected. You get on the field, you make the same mistake. The next week you make that mistake again and again and again, and you get beat, because good teams will isolate and find weaknesses, bad technique, and they will show you something that lures you into worse technique and then pound on you. And so this Arkansas team is fundamentally sound, and they're held to a high standard by their coaches.
We're going to talk to Danny Reed, the play-by-play voice of Georgia Southern, here in just a second as part of our opponent previews that continue this week. Georgia Southern has my attention because they're a triple option team. And I think a lot of times the triple options can give teams fits. I mean, I can think of a couple of years ago when Army went over to Norman and nearly pulled an upset of OU. Here in the last two or three years, Air Force had Michigan on the ropes. You saw, you know, Paul Johnson's teams at Georgia Tech team or give other teams fits. You know, ironically, you know, Paul Johnson really got his start at Georgia Southern and got that football program rolling. Navy, you know, has given teams problems through the years. It's such a hard thing to prepare for a triple option team, you know, just in 1 week, that those games, even though Georgia Southern's not really a name brand type team, that's a game that I think kind of makes your ears perk up a little bit in September.
Oh, I think you're right. And what it does defensively is that it strips you to the bare bones. Blitzes, stunts, those things are pretty much obsolete against an option team. They make you anchor down. You can't play much zone. You better man up outside so you can have extra guys in the box, or they'll have you outnumbered with their option game. So they get, just by the given nature of their scheme, they get man-to-man coverage on the outside. They get man-to-man coverage on their tight end. And they they often release that tight end without even blocking, and you use that extra man to play the quarterback. And when you do, the tight end's always open. So it just causes you problems, especially if they've got a little bit of a talent edge over, you know, say a Navy team. Maybe this team's got a little better speed than what you saw at Navy. Maybe they're more like Georgia Tech, kind of somewhere between there. And they'll be a team that if you make mistakes, they'll keep the ball and let that clock run. And all at once, you're in a dogfight in the fourth quarter that you didn't see coming.
The Whole Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by Bud Anderson Home Services. Each day this week, we are taking a look at the Razorbacks' opponents in the month of September. And today we're going to talk about the Georgia Southern Eagles with Danny Reed, who's the play-by-play voice for Georgia Southern. Danny, thanks for joining us.
You got it, Matt. Appreciate you having me on.
You know, when I look at Arkansas' schedule, Georgia Southern is not the first team I think that jumps out to a lot of people, but to me it was, because I know the history there. And I know of the option offense. It's something unlike, really maybe outside of the academy, something unlike most teams will play at any point in time during their schedule.
It is one of the few teams that still runs it. And granted, even though Georgia Southern used to be a flexbone team up until, I would say, 2014, whenever Willie Fritz took over as head coach and Doug Grues began his first stint as offensive coordinator, the buying process was part of moving the under center to the shotgun and the pistol. And for a lot of purists that exist here in Statesboro, they were wondering, well, we don't know what this looks like. So is it going to get worse? Is it going to get better? Well, it turned out it got considerably better, and the team averaged close to 40 points per game. Now, having Matt Breed at running back was a big part of that, and the same thing in 2015. But a lot of people are hoping that we can return to some of those high-scoring games with Doug back calling plays again. And I know the state of Arkansas is very familiar with him having been at Arkansas State for a number of years. But formation-wise, it's not going to look a ton different from what the Eagles have run the last three seasons when Bob DeBest was the OC. But the good thing is for Doug is his last three games a year ago, he actually took over as the offensive coordinator. And whether it was an audition or not, he was basically calling someone else's offense with some of his tweaks, and he did well enough, especially with a bowl victory over Louisiana Tech, to earn the job again. And people are pretty excited to see what it's going to look like.
Georgia Southern last year was 8-5, 4-4 in the Sun Belt. This is a program, Danny, that, I mean, it's not uncommon for you guys to win 7, 8, 10 games a year. I think there's so much to be said in any sport about having a winning culture. And it seems like Georgia Southern does that pretty well.
It happened so quickly, too, when Irk Russell was brought down in May of 81 after spending 17 years as Vince Dooley's defensive coordinator at Georgia. It came from nothing. There was no field. There was no equipment. They had to go buy a football from the local sporting goods store for the press conference. The first practices took place on tennis courts with all walk-ons. I think it was 120-some walk-ons for those initial workouts. They played three games as a club team in that 81 fall. And then, you know, 4 years later, you're winning a national championship, did it again in 86, first team to ever repeat. You win six national titles in 15 years, 11 conference championships, and now since making the move up to the FBS, winning 3 out of 4 bowl opportunities. The place doesn't know anything outside of winning, and the standard is so high here that even last season when you're dealing with a pandemic and you win 8 games at a bowl game, a lot of people would look at that as underperforming, and that's a lot to live up to. And this year with the schedule as difficult as it is, it's a great home schedule, but there's potential the 3 top 25 teams could visit Statesboro. That's never happened anywhere close to the history of Georgia Southern football. So these guys, number one, they're trying to prove that they're even better than they have been the last couple of years. And two, they can knock off a couple of teams like a Coastal Carolina did or Louisiana did a year ago, that maybe they could become one of those ranked teams and be one of the national darlings in 21.
Let's kind of dig into the personnel. Justin Tomlin played some quarterback for you last year. I saw where James Graham transferred in from Georgia Tech. Is there a quarterback battle this preseason? Who do you expect to see under center?
It's funny you bring it up, because Tomlin, number one, is going to miss the first two games of the season due to an academic issue. He would get a chance to debut at Arkansas, depending on how the quarterback situation shakes out over the first 2 weeks of the season. And then James Graham transferring in from Georgia Tech, he has actually moved to wide receiver just to get him on the field. When he got here in the spring, he was also having some off-field issues, so he didn't really get a whole lot of work offensively, and they deemed that the best chances that he would have to get on the field this year would be to move to wide receiver. Now, whether or not he sees consistent reps, that remains to be seen. But right now, you've got a three-way battle at quarterback going into the opener on September the 4th against Gardner Webb, a pair of freshmen. Cam Ransom is a true freshman from Armwood down in Florida. You've got Sam Kenerson. Both, ironically, are left-handers. George Southern's only had three of those in school history. Kenderson is somebody that took two snaps at quarterback last year, got hurt, but he is definitely in the mix. And then the transfer from Tulane, Amari Jones, who was initially thought of as a replacement for Wesley Kennedy in the slot as a receiver and a running back, he's taken a lot of reps at quarterback. I think the expectation is it's going to be one of the freshmen, but I wouldn't be surprised if Amari Jones took snaps as well at quarterback, considering that that's what he did in high school in Texas, and he was really good at it before he got hurt during his senior year.
One of the things I always look at for an option team is how much experience they have up front, and looks like Georgia Southern's got some pretty good experience there with four starters back.
That's the unit I think it's going to be the best it's been since probably the 2014 championship team. It's been years worth of lack of success in recruiting, attrition, and injuries. 2019 lost three starters to injury at various points in the season and never really found a combination. A year ago was much more consistent. Only six guys started up front all year, and did lose a 13-game starter on right tackle, Drew Wilson. But at the same time, the two guys that saw a lot of reps at left tackle almost split the reps and split the start. So if you could slice it a certain way, you could say that Georgia Southern does have five starters back, and knock on wood, they've all taken the number one reps the first couple of weeks of camp. And you got a guy in right tackle at Caleb Kelly that when he does get a start this season, that will be the only position he hasn't started yet. So he started at all four positions in his career. Nobody in the history of Georgia Southern football has started a game at all five offensive line positions. So his experience is definitely not just in depth, but in the way that he can play each spot up front. You've got the returning center back in Logan Langmeier, your two guards with Aaron Daldo, who's a preseason all Sunbelt guy, and Khalil Crowder. And then with Brian Miller coming back on the left side, that's why Kelly can bump over and play right tackle. But the stability up front, it makes me feel as good about that group as probably since Georgia Southern made the move up in 2014.
Let's move over to defense for a minute. The numbers last year kind of stand out to me. I mean, this is a top 25 defense in scoring, total defense. I think rush defense, they were top 25 as well. A lot of players back from that defense. What do they look like defensively? And I guess it's a 3-4 scheme that they run out of.
Yeah, you do have a couple of guys you need to replace. Raymond Johnson, the defensive end, who had 14 tackles for loss last year. He's trying to make the New York Giants and is in pretty decent position to be in the mix there. I know they have to go through a couple more cuts to get down to 53. I think it's by next week. But you also lose two inside linebackers in Rashad Bird and Raynard Ellis, and then standout safety Kendrick Duncan, who I think had a chance to be the best to ever play here. He transferred to Louisville for his final 2 years of eligibility. But you mentioned about how good that defense was. It was maybe the best defense that Georgia Southern's had in a decade. In some metrics, they were the best in school history in terms of number of penalties committed. Rush yards per carry was the best in almost 20 years. It's just a scheme that Scott Sloan put in when he came here from Appalachian State in 2018. They were very basic in the early going. They weren't exotic, and it just worked. If they were giving up more than 20 points a game, it was almost the outlier just because of how guys bought into the system. I think they're going to be more attacking this year. I would expect more blitzes, more 5- and 6-man pressure. That's where they found their success towards the end of the 2020 season. But they did so many things well last year. And a lot of the guys that played are here, even though you lose some of the marquee players. But those guys, they're going to step in and have to do it on a grander scale. Got a lot of reps a year ago. And from a stability standpoint, C.J. Wright is one of the strongest players in the league at defensive tackle. Randy Wade is an undersung guy at outside linebacker. I think he has a chance to play in the NFL. And I think you've got two NFL caliber cornerbacks eventually. And Daryl Baker Jr., he made Bruce Feldman's freak list not too long ago. And on the other side, Derek Canteen tied for the national lead with 6 picks last year. So even though you take away a couple of the marquee guys, I do think that Georgia Southern's defense is in pretty good shape.
Yeah, top 25 defense last year in turnover margin at plus 9.69 per game. One of the things that has stood out to me as I've looked at Arkansas's first several opponents is that all of them have pretty good kickers. And that's the case with Georgia Southern, too, with Alex Rayner, 18 of 25 last season. Tell us about him and the special teams as a whole.
It's becoming kicker you down here because you had Youngway Koo, who's now with the Falcons, was a Pro Bowler last year. Tyler Bass moves on to the Bills and was a sniff away from going to the Super Bowl last year. That's the last two kickers before Rayner took over. Rayner was a redshirt when Bass finished up here in 2019. But 18 field goals in 25 tries, he was amongst the national leaders in both categories, which in one way, it gave him a lot of chances because the offense had trouble getting red zone touchdowns. But in another way, he was succeeding when he was given the opportunity. He had four field goals against Texas State, hit a 47-yarder against Appalachian State, and somebody that didn't earn the number one job until about a week before camp because he was coming off of ankle surgery. But he has looked really good this year. He's been bagging field goals from 50-plus, and that's something that they didn't venture into last year just because they didn't think that he had that kind of range. He's in a battle as well. There's a true freshman from nearby Richmond Hill and Britton Williams who's routinely making 50-plus field goals. I think ultimately he's going to end up being Georgia Southern's kickoff guy, and the Eagles have done that for a number of years where if one guy kicks, they do have someone else kicking off, even though Rayner did both at the end of last season. And then punting-wise, Anthony Beck has had that on lock for the last three seasons. He's Georgia Southern's all-time leader in career punting average over his first two campaigns. Preseason all-conference guy. He played five different positions in high school, and he's actually he caught a pass 2 years ago from Tyler Bass out at Arkansas State. So he can do a little bit of everything.
We'll get you out of here on this. One of the things that I think is really interesting and I just kind of like to look at from year to year is how teams perform in close games. And whether or not this is right or not, sometimes I think if a team loses close games 1 year, it makes them better at winning them the next year. And that was the case with Georgia Southern last year. There were a lot of close losses. I think what was four of the five losses by one score or less, or by one score, I'm sorry. And then you guys took Coastal Carolina into the fourth quarter, gave them a really good game. This is a team that's really battle-tested.
Yeah, that's a stat that Phil Steele likes. If you have a lot of close wins or losses the year before, it typically levels out. It's just that psychological deal. You regress to the mean. I know he's a big fan of that. There was a stat that one of our local media people pulled out that I thought was really interesting. Last year, Georgia Southern played 13 games. They did not trail at the beginning of the fourth quarter in any game last year. They were either ahead or tied at every fourth quarter's beginning in 2020. Now, those five losses were by a combined 31 points, and 14 of those were against Coastal. Things went haywire the last 7 or 8 minutes of that game. Even though Grayson McCall didn't play, Georgia Southern was right in it. They were a snap here or there from actually controlling that game, and I think in some ways they could have won that game by a couple of scores. But yeah, you had 9 one-score games last year. Hadn't had that many since 2007. It's been a theme since Coach Lunsford took over as the full-time guy in the middle of 2017. Roughly half of his games have been one-score games, and two-thirds of the time, Georgia Southern is finding a way to win those. Now, a lot of that has to do with having so much experience, but a lot of that has to do with the fact that he understands this culture, the do right, the GATA, just as well as anyone who has ever held the position here. And some would look at, well, Georgia Southern hasn't won a conference championship since 2014, but three straight postseason appearances. He has won 27 games over the course of his tenure, took Georgia Southern from 10 losses to 10 wins, from 17 to 18, and the best turnaround that the school has ever had. And his understanding of the culture and the guys that he brings in, that's what has set the Eagles up to be so successful in those close games. Now, I hope the game against Arkansas is close. We'll see how it goes against the team that I'm thinking is going to be really improved this year with two of the better players that the Eagles are going to see all season. But that'll be a month from now. We got Gardner Webb we got to worry about here in 10 days.
Go over to WholeHogSports.com. We have reporters at practice this afternoon. Sam Pittman is scheduled to meet with the media following Thursday's practice, and we'll have a full recap of what he said tonight on our website. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow, previewing the Texas A&M Aggies.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.